There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. You're tuned in to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, co-host and producer extraordinaire, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Howdy.
Hey, listen, you know, a couple of things for followers of the show. Last week around this time, I was talking about, oh, by today, my grandson was born yesterday. He wasn't. He was born that day. We record days out of order sometimes, and that's just the way it goes, baby. So I wanted to just let everybody know that my grandson was born healthy, happy, 9 pounds, 10 ounces, 22 inches long, I believe, on November 18th. So he shares his birthday with my youngest daughter, Ripley.
Aww.
So we wish Ripley a very happy birthday. The day before my daughter Kayla's birthday, which is the 19th. So happy birthday to my daughter Kayla. We missed my wedding anniversary, which is also November 18th. Happy anniversary, honey. So we had a lot of cool stuff happen. My birthday this past Sunday, I am overwhelmed by the amount of emails, messages, Facebook comments that you guys have sent. I cannot possibly respond to them all and have time to live. So thank you all for taking time out of your busy day and thinking of me, sending me those kind thoughts and notes of love. And I got to tell you, man, my heart is touched on a regular basis by our listeners, because I get letters that go beyond just, hey, we love your show. They get into specifics of why they love the show and how we've helped them or we've been there for them as a friend. And it's, you know, you put these kind of shows out there for almost 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, to you and I, it's two buddies getting together to talk.
Yeah.
And you know you have listeners out there, but you don't realize to what extent they're listening or how often they're listening or how many are listening. And it's just so nice to see the kind of impact you have on people's lives just doing a silly little show that two buddies like to do together. And it's great to know that you have that kind of impact. So thank you from the bottom of my heart and Tim's heart for the love and the continued support of the show. For those of you that have just found us again, and I'm baffled by this, Tim.
Okay.
So we were on iHeartRadio for 8 years, right? We jumped over to the podcast network. We were with them for, what'd you say, was it 3 or 4 years?
It was almost four years. It was almost four, because we went over at the beginning of 2017, and it would have been the beginning of 2021, so it was almost 4 years. Yeah.
And then we've, of course, now moved over to our new home and new platform, and I have people that just today that were fans of ours and listeners of ours years ago saying, oh, I really miss you guys, wish you guys were still doing a show. They're following yours in my social media. How are they not seeing us promote the show every week?
I don't know.
We're still here. We haven't stopped 15 years.
Yeah.
This January 1st will be 15-year anniversary for Darkness Radio. We haven't quit.
No.
And I don't know how people got that impression that we quit. I mean, you know, if you listen to the old radio show, you heard me step away from it to go take over the podcast version, because at first we were going to do two separate entities. Darkness Radio would continue on radio with Tim, and Beyond the Darkness would be the program that I would take over and continue over on the podcast network. Mm-hmm. And then Tim decided we just, you know, it's better with the two of us together. And we folded together and took over Beyond the Darkness and continued our journey that way. Mm-hmm. But all along the way, explaining to listeners exactly what we were doing.
Yes.
So yeah. It's just baffling to me that some people don't know, but they found us again. So that's the important thing. And many have found us again because they have Stitcher. And they just happened to notice Darkness Radio popping up on Stitcher. And they're like, oh, I'm glad you're back on the air, and I'm glad you came back to Stitcher. So people, man, when they love a platform, they don't move from it. And I think that's what a lot of this is. If people listened to us on Stitcher in the past and we moved over to a different platform, they just didn't move over to the platform with us. But now that we're back on Stitcher, they found us again. So however you found us, welcome back to the fold. Thank you for making us part of your weekly routine. We appreciate it. Just to remind people, every Tuesday, True Crime Tuesday, that is a separate program, but it is part of the Darkness Radio blanket. You can subscribe and get killer deals right now. As a matter of fact, if you go over to Stitcher Premium and subscribe, remember, you don't just get True Crime Tuesday. When you subscribe, you get all of our episodes of Darkness Radio as well without commercials. You get all of the rest of the amazing programming without commercials on Stitcher. So all of their programs that are under their premium umbrella are yours for one low price. So you don't get just True Crime Tuesday. Sign up for True Crime Tuesday. When you go to Stitcher Premium, use the code word Darkness Radio at checkout. That's Darkness Radio. You're going to get some deep discount savings. And then you can listen to the show ad-free. And all of our shows ad-free. And our old archives ad-free. So that's all there. So just reminding people that's how it works. I still have people who insist they have to pay for the show.
No.
No, you don't. There's this free version that you're listening to right now that has advertisements in it.
Yep.
And that's how they're free. So all of these episodes in our archives are free to you, but you just have to listen to the fine people that sponsor our program. And those are brief moments in time, but you get the rest of our great content. So we want to thank all of our sponsors and all of the advertisers who believe in us and believe in you and advertise on our program because they see its worth and our reach. So thank you for that. Then every Tuesday and Wednesday, you are guaranteed brand new episodes of the best in paranormal talk radio. Wednesday and Thursday, rather. So Tuesday, yeah. True Crime Tuesday. Wednesday, Thursday, you get brand new episodes of Darkness Radio. And as long as the Holzer Files has new episodes airing, every Friday there'll be a special edition of Darkness Radio's Holzer's Ghosts, where we reexamine the episode that just aired on Travel Channel. That's the TV show I'm a part of, the Holzer Files. And you can watch them Thursday nights on Travel Channel. Immediately after, go to my Facebook page or to our YouTube page and watch the live program of us, the Holzer's Ghosts, talking about the episode. I have a few special guests. But for you listening, you get that audio download on Fridays, and you get an extra bit of content every week. And it looks like you guys are enjoying it because we're getting a lot of downloads of that episode, including all of our regular episodes. So thank you for following along on that journey. Make sure you spread the word, share it with people, let people know that that we're out there. The one thing I do ask, because Tim is busily working, trying to put up the old archives. It takes a lot. You guys have no clue the amount of work this guy has to do to edit out any old commercials, music, and radio station mentions to get those episodes up and available. He's put up all of season one from 2016. He's put up most of season two, I believe.
Yep, about three quarters of the way done. Yeah.
Yep, so yep. 2017. If you're not 2007. Seeing all the episodes.
2007.
Yep, just, yep. Or, I'm sorry, 2007. Yep. Refresh your app. Sometimes go all the way out and go in, or make sure that your app has been updated so that you're getting all the episodes, and that's a good way to do it. But I do have a simple request. Some of you are listening to shows from 2006 or 2007 saying, hey, could you guys do a follow-up on this? You know what? There's 14 more seasons to come, and you may find the follow-up in those episodes. And when you write to me and you're like, hey, I need to know which episode to listen to when you talk to that guy who did that thing and saw that crazy stuff, who was that again and which episode? I don't know. And even if you're specific, we've done the show for 15 years. And in some instances, we were doing it five nights a week for 15 years, part of this 15 years. And I cannot remember the name of every guest or the topic or the show that we were discussing at that time. I apologize. That just, it's the recall isn't there. And even when you get kind of specific about it, I've talked to so many people about aliens, ghosts, UFOs, monsters, demons, possessions, dreams, that I can't recall specifics of something maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago. I'm lucky I remember what I ate for lunch yesterday. So, you know, I'm sorry. Your best bet is just hang in with us and keep listening to the archives as they become available. More and more shows available all the time. So you've got 15 years that are going to keep dropping slowly. But so far, Tim's done a great job. All of season one, 3/4 of season two are up. Plus, he's working on all of the backlog of the Beyond the Darkness and everything. So we're working on it diligently to put it all up there and make it available to you. So just be patient with us. That's all we ask.
And just real quick, also, people say, well, my, you know, my Podbean or this or that, I have no control over your apps, your outside apps. Or, you know, if you have an issue with something that hasn't updated in Stitcher, I can contact the fine folks at Stitcher. But I don't control any outside apps. The only apps that we have control over are our own Darkness Radio apps. We can contact the fine folks at Stitcher. Anything outside of that, Podcast United, Podbean, whatever, if they're not updating the actual Stitcher rules, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do about it. All I can suggest is update your app, reset your app, reset your phone. If everything hasn't updated by then, I don't know what to tell you. I can't control each individual app. Literally, Dave, and this is the greatest thing about this acquisition, which I absolutely love, we are available in every single place you can possibly imagine, and there's more to come. There's actually some more places that we've signed up to be in that we can maybe announce here in a few weeks, including, believe it or not, the Indian market, like right. Over in the Far East. So
that doesn't mean we're changing here, folks.
No.
It just means in our new home,
we're adding
we
more,
are able to right, add it to all these other podcast streaming.
Right. We're adding new markets. So the fact of the matter is that there's, you know, hundreds of apps that we'll be on at one time or another. So and that all stems from us being on one system. So, you know, we don't control all of these in different individual apps. The only ones that we really have control over are the Stitcher app and the Darkness Radio app. And we hope you understand that.
Yeah. So you let us know if you're having issues with those, and we will talk to our providers to get that straight. Now, I will tell you, sometimes with the Darkness Radio app, because Tim is updating it so often, sometimes it might act a little janky. You just have to go out and refresh a couple times, and all of a sudden it should populate your list, and you'll be good to go to listen there. Otherwise, just go straight to Stitcher and get the Stitcher app. It's free. It's easy to access. You don't have to pay for the Stitcher app. You don't have to pay for our show on Stitcher app unless you want the premium version without commercials. But you can find the show that way. And I know there was a little trouble a couple weeks back because they were converting their website over to a new platform and you couldn't find us, but we're there now.
Yep.
We check every day to make sure of it. Let's get started with the news, Mr. Dennis, shall we?
Oh, yes.
All right, cue the 2001 A Space Odyssey music, Tim. Because a strain, we can't really because we don't have the license to play it, but maybe you can do the doom, 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 doom.
You know, actually, I have it in my system here. I could.
Oh, do you? You can actually do that?
Yeah, I call it the Ric Flair theme, but, you know, okay. I could kind of put it silently underneath us for a quick second.
If you say so.
Sure, yeah.
Well, this is kind of a weird little story that we've got to talk about. It's coming from Salt Lake City, Utah, where the Utah Department of Public Safety helicopter was assisting Utah Division of Wildlife Resources officers counting bighorn sheep. How do you do that? How do you fly a helicopter and count sheep and not fall asleep, Tim? That's the real mystery of the story we're about to go into.
Or crash the helicopter.
Right. So there, the Utah Department of Public Safety helicopter was assisting the Utah Division of Wildlife Resource officers counting bighorn sheep when the crew spotted something mysterious from above. The discovery was made Wednesday. One of the biologists is the one who spotted it, and we just happened to fly directly on top of it, said pilot Brett Hutchings. He was like, whoa, 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 turn around, turn around. And I was like, what? And he's like, there's this thing back there. We got to go look at it. The crew then circled back and landed the helicopter to take a closer look. They couldn't believe their eyes. Tucked in a red rock cove was a shiny metal monolith protruding from the ground. I'd say it's between 10 to 12 feet high, Hutchings said. We were kind of joking around that if one of us suddenly disappears, then the rest of us better make a run for it. Hutchings said it didn't look like it was dropped into the ground from above. It was firmly planted there. We were like thinking it was this thing, something NASA stuck up there or something. Are they bouncing satellites off it or something? Hutchings questioned. That said, the crew decided it didn't appear there was any scientific purpose to it. Hutchings said that it looked as if it was man-made, perhaps more of an art form than any kind of alien life form. I'm assuming it's some new wave artist or something, or, you know, somebody that has a big 2001 A Space Odyssey fan going on, Hutchings said, referencing a scene in the movie. Because the monolith was in the area the crew featured or feared amateur adventurers might be stuck, they were intentionally vague about its location. The group left with pictures and videos, but very few answers. Hutchings said he had seen many unusual things from the helicopter over the years, but never anything quite like this. That's been about the strangest thing I've come across out there in all my years of flying, said Hutchings. We've got this story with the actual video and photographs of the monolith on our page. If you go to darknessradio.com, that's darknessradio.com, click on the news tab, you'll find that story there. And it is just like 10 to 12 foot tall, kind of shiny monolith. It's very weird. And if they think it's some kind of new age artist, wouldn't the artist want people to know about it?
You would think, yeah.
I don't get it. Maybe we'll have to talk to our buddy Scott Walter and see if he's heard about this and knows anything about it.
Hmm.
You know, from America Unearthed. And the runestone up in, where is that again?
It's the Kensington runestone up in Alexandria. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since we're on that kind of topic, let's go here. An Irish farmer named Donald recently hired a pair of druids to help cast away some major bad luck. Now, Donald had suffered multiple floods, infected cattle, not an infected castle, Tim. Those are rough, and there's just not enough ointment to rub on an infected castle.
There really isn't.
Oh, Donald had suffered multiple floods, infected cattle, and just an altogether unfortunate farming experience at his farm in County Cork, Ireland, when he finally decided to investigate the cause of the lingering shadows that seem to be falling over his lands. Now, if you're familiar with folklore of Ireland, Scotland, and even Iceland, you know that rocks and other natural formations are often not what they first appear to be. With the help of a folklore expert at University College Cork, Mr. Bohane found that his farmland troubles all potentially Bohane found that his farmland troubles all potentially led back to an ancient boundary marker, a standing stone in one of his fields. According to the Irish Examiner, the one-ton stone had, perhaps all the way back in the Bronze Age, been placed as a marker for religious purposes. It may have also been associated with a nearby ring fort about 10 years ago, as Bohane recalls. The stone was displaced, knocked over by a bull that had used it as a scratching post. The farmland has experienced terrible luck ever since. Equipped with this information and at the behest of folklorist Dr. Jenny Butler, Bohane recruited a pair of Irish druids, Jan, or perhaps Jan, and Karen Tatiro from Killarney. They performed an inspection of their own and determined the boundary marker may have actually toppled over onto a ferry road. That was not good news, Tim.
No, it never is.
To set things right, the druids performed a ritual during which they communicated with the unseen people who inhabit the nearby ring fort. Then they restored the stone to its original standing position. The entire process took about 2 hours. Problem solved? Well, it'll take more than a few days for Donald Bohane to figure that one out. He's not alone in suspecting the other world as the cause of his misfortune, though. It was only last July that this news source shared a story about exorcists attempting to cleanse an Iceland farm. These kind of things happen. Meanwhile, you may have been interested in reading more about the two druids. They're members of the Druid Grove of Anu, and you can check out their official website. I'll put this story up as well so that you can read it and find the links to this druid's website if you are so inclined to do so. SpaceX Mars City, Tim, is under attack from an unlikely source.
Really?
Yeah. Werner Herzog. Yes, Director Werner Herzog issues a stark warning to Elon Musk. Elon Musk wants to build a city on Mars, But Werner Herzog says the plan is unequivocally a mistake. SpaceX CEO Musk has a plan to send the first humans to Mars in the mid-2020s using the under-development Starship rocket. Once they get there, Musk wants to build out a self-sustaining million-strong city on Mars by 2050. Ooh.
Hmm.
So it'll be happening while I'm still alive, Tim. Just before 2068, when that asteroid destroys the Earth on my 101st birthday.
Yeah. Hmm.
But famed film director Herzog tells Inverse there is a massive flaw in the latter half of Musk's plan. In a blistering criticism, Herzog describes the idea as an obscenity and says humans should not be like locusts. In the interview conducted earlier this month prior to the release of his documentary on asteroids, Herzog also compares Musk's plan to the rise and collapse of communism and fascism in the 20th century. The 21st century will quickly end the technological utopia like colonizing Mars, he says. Herzog is not opposed to going to Mars at all. In fact, a German filmmaker would love to go to Mars with a camera and scientists, but the long-term vision of a Mars city is a mistake. Herzog's main concern is that humanity should rather look to keep our planet habitable instead of trying to colonize another one. You know what? I'm going to give Herzog some applause on that. We need an applause button, Tim, because this one lonely clap just doesn't do it.
That's what she said.
In short, Mars is not a livable place. There is no liquid water at the surface or air to breathe. Solar winds make inhabitants would be fried like in a microwave, Herzog is afraid. Musk has responded to this kind of criticism before. In 2018, he shared research suggesting water ice exists on Mars in the Korolev crater and hinted the planet needs a warm-up. Over time, researchers have detected more than 1.2 million cubic miles of water ice at or near the surface of Mars. But what kind of crazy biological crap is in there? You could build filters to know what you're filtering, but if you don't know what to filter, will the filter filter the filtered things? That's a lot of words, Tim.
That's a nice little limerick you came up with there.
Thank you.
By the way, have you ever had a nice water ice? It's so good.
Yeah. Musk has repeatedly mooted a plan to heat up the planet and release stored carbon dioxide, citing a 1993 research paper as evidence it would work. He claims doing so would enable humans to walk around Mars with just a breathing apparatus. This claim is controversial, to say the least. A 2018 study found that if scientists released Mars carbon dioxide stores, it would generate an atmosphere of around 15 millibars of pressure, far below the 1,000 millibars found at Earth's sea level. Musk responded to the research by writing that there's a massive amount of CO2 on Mars absorbed into the soil that would be released upon heating, but the evidence is actually lacking. Researchers have also voiced concerns about the effects of space radiation on Mars. Musk said in 2016, it's not deadly, and it's not too big of a deal. So basically, Mars, Musk just kind of, every concern, he just is like, you know, let's not worry about that.
Yeah.
My findings are different than yours, and I think that's okay.
You know, as much as I applaud Elon Musk's moxie, let's call it moxie. His chutzpah, yeah, to keep it clean for the kids. His science is off a lot of times. And if you were to ask me, would I like to take a private ride on old Elon Musk's rocket to Mars, I'd probably turn it down and wait for NASA.
Really?
Yep, I would.
You mean to go to Mars or just a ride, period?
No, to let's just say to colonize. If you had to choose between NASA and their colonization effort and Elon Musk and his colonization effort, I'd go with NASA.
Yeah.
Because
there'll be lots of hookers and blow with Musk's version.
Oh, I'm sure. It would be a much groovier time with Elon Musk.
Much groovier.
But
you know what concerns me is it's got to be some kind of biodome, right? All these eco-terrorists out there would concern me that somebody would infiltrate and then go take out the colony to prove a point of how fallible it is and we shouldn't be messing with another planet, kind of like Herzog is saying, you know, let's not be the locusts of the galaxy. That would be my real concern of going there and being a part of that is, you know, you might think you have people well vetted. I don't know that that's necessarily as true as you would hope it would be.
Well, I think once you're up in the air, I would think Elon Musk might have a more of a built-up security force with you as you go to the red planet. And I think NASA would probably have you better vetted on the way up there, but less protection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, I think you're right. There's probably going to be that threat there that someone's going to think it's unnatural that we're trying to colonize another planet. You're going to have a faction that's going to think that it's unnatural that we try to do this. But let's face it, there is, because of abuse to this planet, and I don't care what side of the aisle you fall on, it's clear that Mother Nature is trying to kind of kick the ticks off her back, put it that way.
Yeah. It certainly feels that way in 2020, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, if you look at weather patterns in general, she doesn't like the fact that there's so many ticks on her back. The fact of the matter remains is that we have to figure out, you know, what we're going to do about that. You know, how do we handle that? Do we just hold on for dear life or you know, what exactly is the solution?
Well, to get around the problems that people keep throwing at Elon, he says in 2017, Musk proposed solar storm shelters on the ships designed to double up as the first habitats. NASA scientists have proposed a magnetic shield to protect against solar winds, too. Another problem Herzog has with Musk's ambitions is to do with the plan to use the refuelable Starship to fly to Mars, set up a base and means to create more fuel, and then let the ships return home or venture out further by establishing bases along the way. While Musk's plan for a multiplanetary species is ambitious, Herzog is still not convinced. I think Elon Musk stylizes himself as some sort of technological visionary, Herzog says, because he has to sell his electric cars. Wonderful that he does that. He has to sell his reusable rockets. Wonderful that he's doing that. But I disagree with him when he postulates and preaches about colonizing Mars, Herzog says. And I have to tell not only Elon Musk, but everyone. And so I say it as straightforward as it can be. It is an obscenity. The thought alone is an obscenity. Musk has been criticized before for focusing on moving to Mars rather than fixing Earth in a 2019 onstage appearance with Jack Ma, the Chinese billionaire, told Musk that Earth needs more heroes, improving things every day. The SpaceX CEO replied, "I think it's important for us to take the set of actions that are most likely to continue consciousness into the future. In case something happens to Earth, in other words." Herzog compares Musk's utopian vision to that of a communism and fascism. Herzog says the 20th century was, in its entirety, a mistake. That's a little rough.
That is
which
rough,
brought
yeah.
the demise of a great social utopias like communism as being the paradises on Earth. No, it failed, Herzog says. Second failure, fascism. Aryan master race will dominate, improve our planet Earth, and really improve humanity. Thank God both these gigantic utopias were brought to an end. The same will happen to Musk's Mars City, Herzog predicts. Our century will very quickly bring an end to technological utopia like colonizing Mars. We will end this utopia very, very quickly within this century. Herzog has discussed Musk's Mars ambitions with him before. And in the 2016 documentary, Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World, Herzog asked Musk during an interview for a one-way ticket to Mars, adding that I'll be your candidate. Musk's response at that time suggested that he's aware not everyone shares his enthusiasm. I do think we'll want to offer round trips because a lot more people would be willing to go if they think that if they don't like it, they can come back, Musk said. But if the reason humanity leaves Earth is because our planet is a mess, returning home might be easier said than done.
You know what? You talk about potential target worlds and where you would want to go. I mean, Mars isn't the most habitable planet you could think of, you know. But yet the ones that are more livable are so far out of reach that you can't possibly get there in a lifetime. So the target in between the two is to make some sort of transportation that can get you there within a reasonable amount of time. But then you have to figure out how do you bend physics and how do you bend science in order to get you there in a reasonable amount of time. And that's a conundrum in this entire thing. So, you know, I mean, that's the piece that we haven't solved in our lifetime is how do you get to the outer reaches of the galaxy in a reasonable amount of time to get to a world that's more hospitable like Earth and not as harsh of a terrain as Mars. Because Mars really is a long shot. If you look at the terrain, if you look at the atmosphere, if you look at what you're facing as far as radiation, I mean, you know, to say, well, we got a long shot over here in Mars that may have some water and it may have some, you know, it may have some potential. You know, you'd really have to be in dire straits on Earth to go, okay, I'm going to go to this long shot over here in Mars and try to make a go of it. You know, just because we saw Matt Damon do it on film doesn't mean that it's gonna pan out for itself, you know?
Oh, you got to take a shot, don't you, Tim? Just always taking shots.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
I know, I'm just teasing.
You know.
Here's an email. And remember, folks, you can email us, dave@darknessradio.com. If you have a question, thoughts, you want to throw out a question to Tim and I or perhaps our listening audience, we can address on future episodes. Or if you have your own paranormal strange encounter you'd like to share. This one starts, Dear Dan, Tom, and Molly.
Oh, good.
Apparently this person found us again and hasn't realized that the show has drastically changed since old Molly was a part of the program.
Probably want to listen further.
Yeah. Ha ha. Just kidding. And I do miss Molly's laugh. Okay. Enough of the Wayback Machine. Late on the night of Wednesday, 21st, October 2020, I heard that James Randi, the amazing Randi, passed away at age 92.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, you had him on the show and talked about his $1 million challenge. I would have sworn that not too much later on, you talked about him passing away, mm-mm, maybe even at age 92. No great shakes, just thought you might appreciate hearing this, and I'm curious to hear if you or anyone else remembers things this way. We always enjoy the show and wish everyone involved much enjoyable success. Thank you, Brian and Donna. Thank you, Brian and Donna. I think what you're confusing is we did that episode about the $1 million challenge. We did it with two guests, Lou Gentile and the amazing Randi, both on in separate quadrants. Lou Gentile died shortly after we did that interview.
Right.
So the amazing Randi, much to the dismay of a lot of people in the paranormal field, continued kicking. I personally am a fan of the amazing Randi and what he did and set forth to do and accomplish. And he exposed, you know, again, watch that documentary, An Honest Liar. It's pretty interesting. He exposed Peter Popov, the healing preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how people will just excise that thought from their mind and continue to go to Popov, even though it was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt he was perpetrating a scam. Allegedly.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, I know that episode with Randi and Lou is up, and I think there's a follow-up episode as well that's up right now in the archives with James Randi. The second interview that we did with him, I believe, is up. That took place in 2007.
Something like that.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter is no. There, you know, Randi appeared on the program a few times. He very much lived on well after that. And like Dave points out, no, it was Lou Gentile. And we even mentioned it on the show that Lou Gentile had passed.
Right.
And that he was the victim of an unfortunate accident. And that's where the death occurred between the two.
So that's what I think people are maybe making. We make that mistake. You remember hearing and then, you know, the two of them together and that they were kind of tied together with this weird challenge.
Right.
And that one of them passed away.
But unfortunately, it
was Lou Gentile.
Too. And I think where the confusion may come in, too, is we had mentioned on Supernatural News, I think maybe it might have been a year or two ago, we had mentioned that James was not in great health. I think that's where people's confusion might have been, because somebody had mentioned or had asked us if we could have him back on. And I think you had mentioned that he wasn't in great health and that you had reached out to him or you had tried to book him for the show. right. And that he was not in great health. And that's why we had had other representatives. See, I can't even talk now. Other representatives from JREF that would come on and talk about the $1 million challenge. And you had even mentioned for a time that the $1 million challenge wasn't available anymore, and that they had restarted it up, or some representative had restarted it up. But that JREF would not come on and talk about it any longer. Something to that effect, but that representatives would come on and talk, but that Mr. Randy was no longer available to talk because he wasn't feeling well. I think that's where a lot of people are coming to that conclusion.
Yep. Well, now you know, you've got the full-on knowledge from us here. Here's an email from Harry Reddick. In the early 90s, I moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas, where I met a wonderful woman and settled down to a wonderful life. Later on, I installed a door and side lights going out to our newly installed deck. While painting the new interior trim, we decided to paint the whole dining room, walls, ceiling, and trim. The next morning, I was sitting on the couch in my skivvies, that's underwear for those of you that are under the age of 45, having my first cup of coffee. Then I got up to get a second cup. A couple of feet into the dining room, something fell from above, just a few inches from my face, and it bounced off the floor. I yelled, "Honey!" And I told my wife what had just happened. I looked up at the freshly painted ceiling, expecting to see a hole. Nope, no hole. It fell right in front of my face. Looking more closely at it, it was a perfect three-point arrowhead. I guess I took this as a sign of approval for the work I'd done, since I had a fondness for arrowheads. After that, small things began to happen. Things would come up missing, later to be found in the exact place they were supposed to be. One time, a painting flew off the dining room wall and landed about 5 feet away. We began calling our resident spirit Bob. There was never anything menacing. He was just mischievous. Later on, I was out in the shop working on a project with a friend. My rule for working on a table saw is never take your eye off the blade, and reminded my friend of that. My friend, Frank, and I were cutting some trim boards. I was running the boards into the saw, and Frank was holding them steady and taking them off the saw. Watching the blade, we both in our peripheral vision saw someone walk in through the side door. I thought it was my wife, just home from work. I turned the saw off and turned around to say hello, and there was no one there. Frank jumped and said, "What the hell was that?" I told him, "Bob." He believed me because he'd seen him too. That's the only time I can say I'd ever seen him. Now, in 2003, my wife was transferred to San Antonio, Texas. We rented out the Hot Springs house to a tenant that ended up trashing the place. I found myself going back to Hot Springs to repaint and extensively repair it for a new tenant. I was finished for the day and was going to go out for dinner. As I sat on the bed, a walking stick that had been propped up in the corner came off the wall several inches and spun around a couple of times and bounced a few times back into place. When the next tenant left, back I went to Hot Springs to freshen up the place. I walked into the dining room. I found a 3-inch quartz crystal, terminated on both ends with a 6 perfect sides in exactly the same place that the arrowhead had landed. Having hunted crystals in that area, I knew it was a rare crystal. I said, "Wow, Bob, did you send this to me?" I then walked into the kitchen. Standing at the kitchen sink, looking out on beautiful West Mountain, I noticed the cabinet door to the left stood open about 3 inches. As I reached up for it, with the crystal still in my hand, something I couldn't see hit that door so hard it slammed shut and bounced all the way open again. I have to tell you that every hair on my body stood up on end. When I managed to regain my composure, I said, "Okay, Bob, I know it's you. Sorry I've been gone so long. I'm here to fix it up again." Some years later, my wife was just about to drop off to sleep. She heard the name Pascal in her mind and knew it was our Hot Springs spirit. There were so many Spanish explorers in that area back in the day. So here's to you, Pascal. I hope your existence on the other side is enjoyable and comfortable. Thanks for the trinkets and the experiences. And that comes from Harry. So thank you, Harry. We appreciate you sending that story into us. Yeah. Very, very cool.
Very cool.
And remember, folks, just email me your stories, dave@darknessradio.com. Now, some of you have gotten shy.
Yeah.
People are afraid to call in. You remember, you call in. You don't even have to talk to either one of us. You could just tell your story right on our voicemail, our Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977, 651-300-4977. Leave us your story. You have up to 3 minutes to tell us your short story, or if you need longer, just as soon as you disconnect, call right back and pick up where you left off on your story, and Tim will knit them together in an audio form and play it on a future episode. And thank you to many of you that have written in your stories to us for Theater of Their Mind. I have a question, Tim, and yeah. I'll pose it here.
Okay.
And get a sense from people. As we're hoping to launch Theater of the Mind again in January.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it might not be better to place Theater of the Mind on Wednesday's episodes with news. Instead of interrupting an interview flow with a Theater of the Mind, as mm-hmm. we've done in the past, have Wednesday's episode of Supernatural News and Parashare, somewhere in the middle of the episode, we'll drop in the new Theater of the Mind and play it out there. And then that way the interview and the interviewee gets the attention that they deserve. What are your thoughts on something like that?
I think it'd probably be better.
Okay, folks, so let us know what your thoughts are. If you think you'd rather hear it here on a Supernatural News Parashare episode, or would you rather we play it as we used to in the middle of an interview, where you're hearing the interview, we go to commercial break, come back into a Theater of the Mind, and then back into the interview. The only reason we used to do that was we would try to find stories that kind of correlated with the episode. So if the guest was talking about shadow people, we try to share a shadow person encounter. But because we can't really gauge those type of stories, maybe we should just stick with it. So you can email us, let us know your thoughts, dave@darknessradio.com, and we'll see how we can work that in. Before we go to break, Timothy,
mm-hmm.
Timmy, Tim,
mm-hmm.
we have a new story to talk about.
Okay.
A man who was cleared last month of assaulting his ex-partner has told the Irish Mail on Sunday how he suffered 3 years of hell as a result of her being possessed by demonic forces, which he tried to rid her of through exorcism. Shane Gibbons told his told how his girlfriend would go into trance-like states before spouting Latin. Lights would turn off and on, items would fly off the walls, and she would experience horrible bruising and horrific-looking scratch marks. I would witness poltergeist activity and the whole plethora of stuff, he said. The bruising she was getting was horrible. When I wasn't there, it would escalate. Some of the marks she got were horrific looking marks, scratch marks and all that. Mr. Gibbons, who is aged in his 40s and from Oganola, near Scariff in East Clare, denied a charge of assault causing harm to the woman at his home on August 17th, 2019, and decided to speak out after a judge dismissed the charge against him, saying his version of events concerning the occult, exorcism, and devilish possession should have been explored by more by the state. Parish priest Father Dunham O'Meara, who Mr. Gibbons called for help at one point, told the told us that although he is reluctant to say the woman was possessed, Mr. Gibbons is not telling you a lie. So it was a very interesting way of saying that story. He didn't want to go on record officially saying a woman was possessed, but that what this man was claiming was the truth.
Hmm.
He certainly is telling the truth, and I'll verify all of that, the priest said. I met with them, and I'll verify everything. He's not telling you a lie. Jane Donnelly, a healer from Kerry, told how she had vivid memories of meeting Mr. Gibbons and then his girlfriend when she was in a catatonic state. She was just completely catatonic, like out of it. She was just completely catatonic, completely, and shaking. And he had to hold her to bring her in, she said. One of Ireland's only exorcists has also spoken of how there is evidence from across Europe of a huge upsurge in demand for his type of work, but said although he had spoken to the couple briefly on the phone, he had never met them and could therefore not make a diagnosis. Mr. Gibbons, a businessman and father of young children, told how he has been left traumatized because of his relationship with the woman and its aftermath, which resulted in his being brought before a court. One thing I did learn from all of this is that good and evil definitely exist, he said this week. He said, if I never saw any of this again, I'd be absolutely delighted. It is not something you invite upon yourself. It is not something I wanted to deal with or ever expected to deal with. I'm a very practical guy. I would have kept this private The only reason this has come to light is because of the court case. Mr. Gibbons described what he saw, which he says clearly sets it apart from a mental health issue. I'm sure lots of people will come up with their scientific explanation and mental health issues, and I actually think that both can exist at the same time, but there are far too many things that happened to her and me that would account for her being under an influence of something evil. I would have been that way of thinking myself, but just too many things happened. Too many bizarre things occurred. Those bizarre things, including lights turning on and off, furniture flying off walls, his then girlfriend going into trances and other voices taking over, which would sometimes speak in Latin. I wonder if it was pig Latin.
No, probably, yeah.
Ouye uxe! Oh my God, it's possessed by Porky the Pig. Poltergeist activity, basically, and this whole plethora of stuff, he said, well, the bruising she got was horrible. When I wasn't there, it would escalate. For some reason, I think this author of the article needed a certain amount of words and is just repeating everything they've already written in the beginning of the article. But
getting paid by the word.
Yeah kind of crazy. So we're glad he's safe. That they took it and took it seriously enough. And this is a long article, but it just keeps repeating itself and the claims. I'll put this article up so people can read the full thing and cut through some of the double speak and get to the whole thing, but people can read it there as well.
Okay, if you would do me a small favor, though, on Thursday nights, I have a small hobby I like to do. I like to sit around and read the old Latin Mass, Catholic too that I am, and, I like to turn the lights on and off for effect.
Sure.
And occasionally I'll trip and fall. I might bruise myself. I don't want you coming over to the house, throwing me in a straitjacket and pouring holy water over me, thinking I'm possessed. It's just a little hobby I have. I like to get into the old Catholic too, Latin Mass, and
And you do that on Thursday nights, you say?
Thursday nights. So just,
instead of watching the Holzer Files or our Holzer's Ghost.
I do it right up until 9 o'clock. Holzer Files, and then, you've got your after show afterwards, and then, I like to get a good Catholic 2 Mass going, a good Latin Mass going, and, every once in a while, my eyes will roll back in my head, because, I'm a little tired, my eyes get a little tired from all that reading Latin, it's nothing demonic, nothing to worry about. Don't get concerned or anything.
Well, just remember, Tim, in pine tatis, in oak nunnis, in mud elis, in clay nunnis. We'll be back. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. We're reading your emails. We've got more news stories to share. Here's an email. In 1990, I was a young mother. Tim, this is an email, not me telling a story.
Oh, you weren't a young mother?
No. Oh, okay. In 1990, I was a young father, but mother's sharing her story. In 1990, okay. I was a young mother and busy with a new baby. One afternoon, I was running errands on a beautiful, clear day. I was in the middle of town. The town is a bedroom community outside of a large city, sitting at a red light at a busy intersection. The intersection was a four-way light with turning lanes and a railroad track directly in front of me. As I sat at that red light waiting for it to change, a 2 to 3 foot ball of light was coming from the opposite direction, but right in front of me. It flew directly toward the red light, about 20 feet off the ground, stopped at the red light and turned north and continued down the railroad tracks. It was a ball of light, 2 to 3 feet, and glowing and moving in a precise manner. It happened so quickly, the traffic light turned green, but no one but me seemed to notice. A worthy note here is that a military presence is in that area. It was vivid, and I never forgot how intelligent it seemed. I'm an avid fan of all of this and of your shows, both of you. I have a few other stories I'll share soon. With fine regards, Chef Jan Roast.
Oh,
maybe it's Jan. I'm guessing Jan.
Jan.
Jan Roast.
Jean-Luc.
See, another one of those, love you guys, love these shows, and I've got more stories.
Where are the other stories?
Just send them all now. Stop being so tight with your dang story. All right.
All right.
We've got more news to cover, Tim. A lot of news. Lots and lots of news.
All right.
Tim, our nightmares are all coming true.
No.
In 1 week's worth of news.
No.
Uh-huh. Well played, 2020. All right, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just put this out there.
Okay.
This is a real thing.
Right.
This is the beginning of the zombie apocalypse.
Now, come on. Now.
Now, wait. I want you to hear this.
All right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to hear this.
Sure.
Because I firmly believe this is truly the beginning of it. And I'm not just saying that because I think all three things may be coming to something we didn't count on, Tim.
What's that?
All three things coming to fruition at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So let me read this to you.
Okay.
Grow your own human steaks.
Ooh, delicious.
The kit is not technically cannibalism, according to the makers. The saying, you are what you eat, may soon become a lot more literal. A DIY meal kit for growing steaks made from human cells was recently nominated for Design of the Year by the London-based Design Museum. Named the Ouroboros Steak, after the circular symbol of a snake eating itself tail first, the hypothetical kit would come with everything one needs to use their own cells to grow miniature human meat steaks.
You.
Just let that sink in, Tim.
Only
instead of finding ways to take cells from the McRib and create your own McRib at home, which would make all the sense in the world, no, they're letting you take just a small sampling of your own meat and make a steak out of it. People think that eating oneself is cannibalism, which technically this is not, Grace Knight, one of the designers, told Design Magazine. Before you go running for your wallet, I know this isn't a product available to buy. It was created by scientist Andrew Pelling, artist Orkin Tellen, and Knight, an industrial designer, on commission by the Philadelphia Museum of Art for an exhibit last year. Growing yourself ensures that you and your loved ones always know the origin of your meat, how it has been raised, and that its cells were acquired ethically and consensually, a website for the Imagine product states. The project was made as a critique of the lab-grown meat industry, which the designers told Design Magazine is not actually as animal-friendly as one might expect. Lab-grown meat relies on fetal bovine serum, or bovine, depends, potato, potato.
Sure.
Or animal cell cultures, though some companies have claimed to have found alternatives. FBS is made from calf fetus blood after pregnant cows are slaughtered.
Deal.
Lab-grown meat has not yet been approved for human consumption, though some products could hit store shelves in the next few years. As the lab-grown meat industry is developing rapidly, it is important to develop designs and expose some of its underlying constraints in order to see beyond the hype, Pelling told the zine. Growing an Ouroboros steak would take about 3 months using cells taken from inside your cheeks, the magazine reported. For the collection of sample steaks on display in the museum, the team used human cell cultures purchased from American Tissue Culture Collection and grew them with donated blood that expired and would have been otherwise destroyed. They preserved the final product in resin. Expired human blood is a waste material in the medical system and is cheaper and more sustainable than FBS, but culturally less accepted, Knight told Design. So you can, it takes 3 months to grow a ewe steak, Tim?
I guess so, yeah.
I mean, I've heard of aged meat. When you go in, you spend a lot of money to get aged steaks.
Right.
You grow, and these do not look tasty. I'm not even going to include this article and the story because these, you look it up for yourself. They're not good looking chunks of meat, Tim.
Okay.
Well, they're not.
Here's my question. Normally, you go, when you go to a good steakhouse, you know, they'll tenderize a steak. Okay.
I know where you're going with this already. And
a lot of times they'll use a mallet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they'll beat that meat before you eat the meat.
Uh-huh. My apologies, folks. We all knew that was about to take a weird, weird turn. But look, that's where it begins, Tim. The creating of human meat. Take a look at the picture I just sent you. Do any of those look appetizing to you, Tim?
Hold on. I just had to get that out.
Bacon wrap them. Maybe bacon wrapping them.
Well, you know what it looks like? It looks like pork.
Yeah.
Or chicken. Ugh. Like really.
But that's how it starts, and people start getting the flavor.
The flavor for some human meat.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, what happens next, Tim? Zombie apocalypse.
Well, you know what we've always heard, Dave? We've always heard that from cannibals who have eaten human flesh, they say it tastes like pork.
Mm. Yeah. I don't ever hear that because I don't talk to cannibals, Tim.
Oh, come on. On shows that we've done about cannibals before, they've always said that human flesh tastes like pork.
Let's move on to the next story, Tim. Okay. So there is my proof that the zombie apocalypse is probably forthcoming because people are going to get the
flavor. I just think this Grace lady's a little freaky deaky. That's what I think. Yeah.
Well, scientists in our next story, Tim, have inserted a human gene in the brains of monkeys to make them larger, more wrinkled in disconcerting lab experiments. Experts found the insertion of the gene called Aragab-11b resulted in larger neocortex in the fetus of a common marmoset. The neocortex is the deeply grooved outer layer of the brain that is involved with reasoning, language, conscious thought, and other important functions. ROGAB11B, which is found in humans but not non-human primates or other mammals, triggered the monkey's brain stem cells to form more stem cells, enlarging the size of the monkey's brain. Genetically tweaked marmoset brains were found to mimic the natural bumps and indentations found in human brains, known as the gyri and sulci, respectively, an evolutionary trait in humans to increase surface area for neurons, the nerve cells. The experiments are evocative of the recent Planet of the Apes films, which genetically modified primates wage a war on humanity, Tim. Researchers developed 7 marmoset fetuses in total, all in utero inside the womb, and were obtained at day 102 of pregnancy by cesarean section for analysis. Huh. Cesarean, Caesar, the name of the monkey that becomes powerful in the Planet of the Apes, Tim. Uh-huh. Just saying. We found indeed that the neocortex of the common marmoset brain was enlarged and the brain surface folded, said study author Michael Hyde at the Max Planck Institute for Molecular Cell Biology and Genetics. We also saw increased numbers of upper layer neurons, the neuron type that increases its primate evolution. The human neocortex is about 3 times bigger than that of our closest relatives, the chimpanzees. During evolution, our brains folded into the distinctive wrinkled appearance to fit inside the restricted space of our skull, while allowing the surface area of the neocortex to be greatly increased. Images of the 101-day-old genetically engineered marmoset fetus about 50 days away from its normal birth date rate show this included folding in the team's experiments. This contrasts with marmoset brains normally, which are much smoother than human brains, as well as much smaller. Aragab-11b may have caused neocortex expansion during human evolution, according to the team, which also included experts from Central Institute for Experimental Animals in Kawasaki and the Keio University in Tokyo, Japan. The Japanese researchers included Hayeduki Okano, had pioneered the development of a technology to generate transgenic non-human primates. Okano's lab at the Riken Center for Brain Science in Waco, Japan, maybe it's Waco, I don't know, was the first in the world to produce transgenic marmosets with germline transmission. GT is a technique where embryonic stem cells contribute to the reproductive cells of a mammal and are genetically passed to its offspring. However, there was no use of GT for this project for the simple reason that the transgenic marmoset fetuses were not allowed to be born. Or were they, Tim?
I think they were, or Dave.
Were they?
I think we already have an example in the wild.
We can find our analysis to marmoset fetuses because we anticipated that the expression of this human-specific gene would affect the neocortex development in the marmoset. So, Tim, they're monkeying, pardon the pun, with brains and making them more human. So we've got a good case for the beginning of the zombie apocalypse by growing our own meat steaks.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get yourself a nice Dave steak aged 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps the monkey Planet of the Apes. But I will give you this, Tim. You also have a story in the news. Actually, there were a few. There was a talk of construction adding robots to their line. Mm-hmm. And saying that that this is something that is probably the wave of the future, that they would have more robotic and AI help in the construction of homes and large buildings, which, again, starts to make you worry not so much about Terminator, but people losing their jobs. That's my biggest concern.
Now, you totally stepped on my touchdown call there. And literally, it was a touchdown call about the fact that we may already have an example of what you said about the marmoset.
The monkey being born with a human brain?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
He lost on Monday Night Football. There's already one in the wild.
Who's that?
Tom Brady. Think about it.
Oh. Good God, Tim.
He's 43 years old. You've never had a quarterback that old who's performed at that level, Dave. He is not human.
He might be AI, Tim. What if he's an AI Terminator robot? We don't know it.
I don't think he's a robot. I think he's an advanced ape
monkey?
/ human. Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
South Korean television channel MBN recently introduced its viewers to the Asian country's first ever AI-powered news anchor in an eerily realistic version of human anchor Kim Ju-ha. Developed by MBN in partnership with artificial intelligence production company MoneyBrain, South Korea's first AI-powered news anchor was reportedly shockingly similar to her human inspiration. Not only did it have the exact same look and voice of the popular presenter, but she also mimicked the small gestures that Kim sometimes makes, like fiddling with a pen while reporting the news. During a broadcast on November 6th, AI Kim even shared a conversation with real-life Kim Ju-ha to compare their voices, which apparently freaked out a lot of people. I was created through deep learning, 10 hours. That's all it took, 10 hours of video of Kim Ju-ha learning the details of her voice, the way she talks, facial expressions, the way her lips move, and the way she moves her body. The AI-powered news anchor said, according to Korea Joong-ang Daily, I am able to report news exactly the way that anchor Kim Ju-ha would. MBN revealed that AI newscasters may be better suited to deal with natural disasters and other emergencies as they are available at any time, day or night. The company also expects this new technology to help cut its labor and production costs. As scary as that sounds to human news anchors, some experts are convinced that digital AI-powered avatars will never fully replace human anchors. Yoo Sung-chul, a professor at the School of Communication and Media at Ewha Women's University in Seoul, believes that the concept known as Uncanny Valley, the idea that an almost human-looking robot digital avatar seems overly strange to some human beings, including a feeling of uncanniness, will help human anchors keep their job. It cannot cross a very fine line where it's not too different from us, but not too similar either. That's what you said. And even if it becomes too natural for us to tell whether it's real or not, the human mind will immediately reject it once it finds out it's not real. Viewers' reactions to AI Kim's unveiling on November 6th were mixed, with some people praising its likeness to the real Kim Ju-ha, while others declared themselves freaked out by the same unnatural likeness. While AI Kim may be South Korea's first ever AI-powered news anchor, it's definitely not the first such creation in the world. A couple years ago, China's state news agency Xinhua unveiled two very realistic-looking AI news anchors. Last year, it followed up with its first female AI-powered anchor, which looked just as impressive as MBN's digital avatar. So, Tim, Darkness Radio could possibly go on for centuries because we have, what'd you say, we have over 7,000 hours of programming?
Well, we've got just about, just about 7,000 hours of programming, yeah.
So that's a lot of information that could be fed into a computer, Tim, to create a digital Dave and Tim to continue the show going. What do you think? Maybe they'll even commit ones that I have a better sense of humor.
A soulless Dave and Tim.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not so far from belief, but. All right. So there was your first AI story. Now, that one's not too scary, Tim. AI news anchors, big deal, big deal.
Well, depending on who you ask, have you ever watched those?
I'm going to give you another story that backs your story.
Wait a minute. Have you ever watched those creepy YouTube videos that have the AI voices behind them?
Actually perfectly mimicking the voices.
You'll never have it perfect, because then they go to pronounce Minnetonka, and it's like Minnetonka or Minnetonka. And you're like, wait a minute, you're not from here. You're not one of us. And then you want to go and find where this little robot is, and you want to go step on him like a bug. I mean, come on.
Well, Tim, here's some news for you.
All right.
Maybe this will make you feel better. Maybe not. For all our fears about Terminator-style killer robots, the aim of AI in the U.S. military is likely to be on augmenting humans, not replacing them, Tim. Why does this matter? AI has been described as the third revolution in warfare, after gunpowder and nuclear weapons. But every revolution carries risks, and even an AI strategy that focuses on assisting human warfighters will carry enormous operational and ethical challenges. Driving the news on Tuesday, Armenia accepted a ceasefire with its neighbor, Azerbaijan, to bring a hopeful end to their brief war over the disputed enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh. Now, Azerbaijan dominated the conflict in part thanks to the ability of its fleets of cheap armed drones to destroy Armenia's tanks in what military analyst Malcolm Davis called a potential game changer for land warfare. An even bigger game changer would be if such armed drones were made fully autonomous. But for the foreseeable future, such fears of slaughter bots that could be used to kill with impunity appear overstated, says Michael Horowitz, a political scientist at the University of Pennsylvania. The overwhelming majority of military investments in AI will not be about lethal autonomous weapons, and indeed, none of them may be, said Horowitz. A report released last month by Georgetown Center for Security and Emerging Technology found defense research into AI is focused not on displacing humans, but assisting them in ways that adapt to how humans think and process information, said Margarita Konev, the report's co-author, at an event earlier this week. A version of that future was on display at an event held in September by the Air Force to demonstrate its advanced battle management system. Now, look, they missed a chance here, Tim. Advanced battle management system. They should have made it Battle Advanced Management System. They could have called them BAMs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those can rapidly process data in battle and use it to guide warfighters into the field. Even though they have extremely expensive hardware at their fingertips, servicemen and women in firefight mostly transmit information manually, often through chains of radio transmissions, but ABAMs aims to use cloud computing and machine learning to speed up that process, augmenting the abilities of each warfighter. At the September demo, Anduril, a young Silicon Valley startup backed by Peter Thiel and co-founded by Palmer Luckery that focuses on defense, showed off its Lattice software system, which processes sensors data through machine learning algorithms to automatically identify and track targets like an incoming cruise missile. Using the company's virtual reality interface, an airman in the demo only had to designate the target as hostile and pair it with a weapon system to destroy it, closing what the military calls a kill chain. So what they're saying at the core of it all, our view is that the military has struggled with the question of how do I know what's happening in the world and how do we process it, said Brian Schrimpf of Anduril's CEO. What Anduril and other companies involved in the sector are aiming to do is make AI work for defense in much the same way it currently works for other industries, speeding up information processing and creating what amounts to more effective human-machine hybrid workforce, Tim. So bottom line, two questions should always be asked whenever AI spreads to a new industry. Does it work? Should it work? In war, pardon me, the stakes of these questions
can't get
any higher. Yeah. You know, that was, I don't know where that came from.
Came from the devil.
The devil. So that's the story, Tim. That's the creepy-ass story of it all. All right.
I'll just remember what my boy, PF, Papa Pope, we call him in the streets, said about AI just 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
The pontiff, if you will. Pope Francis. He said, get that Shiite out of here, man.
Yeah.
He said, there's no good. No good.
I wonder what the Pope thinks about this. Perhaps this is what we should start being concerned about. Fishpocalypse, Tim.
Fishpocalypse.
A walking fish, Tim. A walking fish, Tim.
Turn it into a loaf. Boom, it's out of there.
This is the bizarre moment. Stunned divers spotted the strangest fish in the Caribbean walking. Marine expert Mickey Charitas discovered the short-nosed batfish in a muddy channel near the island of Roatan, Honduras. And despite spending years chronicling sea life in that region, he said the oddball creature is the weirdest of the lot. It's hands down the strangest fish in the Caribbean, he said, after spotting the freak of nature skipping through a gully called French Key Cut. It walks slowly, searching for prey like crabs and small fishes, but can swim with its tail if it gets spooked. It resembles a lump of brown sponge that mated with a unicorn.
What?
In his underwater footage, the spooky fish can be seen with its horn on its head, pushing itself along the seabed, walking on its fins. Charteris, an expert on marine species, said it looked like a dark wedge from above, but had red lips when seen from below. It's very seldom seen, said the 50-year-old author of Caribbean Reef Life. You have to go out of your way to dive in silty channels and shallow sandy flats where there is usually less visibility. Normal divers would be lucky to find one out of the reef once every few years if you dive every day. We had heard of a few in that area and went specifically to try to record it. They are not common. Walking fish, Tim. And with their pointy unicorn noses, soon they're going to be coming after us.
You know,
all of our fears of AI, Tim, and zombie apocalypse and monkeys shooting up the planet, not even a problem.
You know,
what's the real problem?
Walking fish. You know, Silty Channels was my porn name on the Sandals Resort.
Right, I recognize that.
Yeah. You know, if I saw that fish coming at me, seriously, with a little horn that's like walking on its fins, it can't walk very fast, first of all. Wouldn't you just kick it by the horn back into the ocean?
No, it probably is all spiny and poisony.
Spiny and
poisony.
Swim
away screaming underwater. You just hear...
Bring me that filet fish. Bring me that fish.
We have one more story to share before we get into celebrity news, Tim, and we've got an abundance this week.
All right.
An attempted murder investigation is underway in South Africa after a woman was attacked and set on fire. While witchcraft is generally uncommon in the modern age, those who do practice it can typically do so without fear of punishment and death that was typical of societies hundreds of years ago. There are, however, parts of the world in which witchcraft is still heavily shunned. Such attitudes were brought into sharp focus recently when a 27-year-old woman in Durban, South Africa, was attacked, doused with petrol, and set on fire after being accused of being a witch. The local police department has since opened an attempted murder investigation. The 27-year-old victim was allegedly assaulted and burnt with petrol by members of the community, said KZN police spokesperson Captain Noguibriguara. The victim was accused by the community of being involved in witchcraft. She was taken to the hospital for medical attention. The incident echoes the case of three women in KwaZulu-Natal who in 2018 were murdered because they were believed to be involved in witchcraft. All three died after being set on fire. It is unclear whether or not the persons responsible have yet to be brought to justice. Huh? Still burning witches in 2020.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, space, the final frontier. A Star Trek captain joins a group dedicated to searching for actual alien life. Star Trek franchise star Anson Mount has already been working to seek out new life in a Starfleet uniform. Now, even as he prepares to boldly go to a brand new Star Trek series, he's expanding the search to his real life as well. The scientific organization known as METI, Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, announced this week that Mount has joined the board of directors of their group, making him an even more active participant in educating the public about the various means of searching for intelligent life beyond our planet, and in particularly METI's dedication to an active search for extraterrestrial life. It is a distinct privilege to be asked to join the outstanding scientists, artists, and innovators that make up the METI team, Mount said in a statement. I look forward to helping this organization expand its footprint in our cultural landscape and educate the general public about our endeavors to connect with extraterrestrial intelligence through scientific methods as we continue to grapple with the implications of this work. As a Starfleet captain, it brings me unbridled joy to be able to say that I am actually sending out a hailing call. Mount is best known among sci-fi fans for portrayal of Captain Christopher Pike on the CBS All Access series Star Trek Discovery, as well as his roles in series like Inhumans and the acclaimed Western drama Hell on Wheels. After reprising his role for episodes of the anthology series Short Treks, Mount is gearing up to play Pike again on the upcoming Trek series Strange New Worlds. His connection to METI began in 2017 when his longtime friend, Brannon Edgins, interviewed METI president Douglas Vakoch for an episode of his podcast, The Well. Founded in 2015, METI's goal is to expand on the efforts of other SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence organizations, by sending powerful intentional signals to nearby stars in the hope of prompting a reply. The idea being that some extraterrestrial civilizations may only be listening for signs of other life rather than broadcasting themselves. You can find out more about METI's plans and mission on its website. So I'll include this story today. If you go to darknessradio.com, click on the news tab, you'll find this and many of the other stories we've talked about there so that you can find out more about it. How cool is that, Tim?
Yeah, pretty cool.
A Star Trek captain. But that wasn't the coolest message to be sent out by a Star Trek captain this week, Tim. Let's go ahead and play that audio right now.
I'm William Shatner. I've done a lot of things in my career, but this takes the cake. This is so cool. You, David, today, it's all about you. You were born today. It's your birthday. It's exciting. It makes me want to celebrate. Makes me want to get up out of this chair. Makes me want to sing. Makes me want to dance. Makes me want to shout. Kick my heels up. Throw my hands up. Toss my head back. No, really, people should be shouting your name in the street.
Come on now. Sing that name.
Sing that song.
David, sing
it out loud.
David.
I want to celebrate. Put it up in lights.
Happy birthday.
See, no one else deserves to be celebrated like you because you are the best.
I want you to know.
I want you to know.
Said I want you to know.
I want you to know right now. You make me want to shout. That's right. You make me want to shout because there really is no doubt. You know what I'm talking about because you make me want to shout.
Yeah.
How cool is that? William Shatner wishing me a happy birthday. Huh? How cool is that?
I thought
it was pretty cool.
He didn't say Dave Schrader.
He said David. He was talking to me. I'm David. And he wished me, David, a happy birthday. Don't you rain on this parade. I will never read another AI story ever again. Do you understand me, boy?
Sure.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Let's go to our next story. It takes us all the way to Canada, home of William Shatner, birthplace of William Shatner, Tim. Ryan Phillippe took his son on an adventure to find space aliens for his 17th birthday. Ryan Phillippe got pretty creative on his son's 17th birthday, appearing Tuesday on Live with Kelly and Ryan. The actor revealed the space alien-themed adventure he took his son Deacon on to celebrate the occasion. We did some rock climbing and this and that. I had rented an alien-themed Airbnb and then revealed to him that the actual intent of our trip was to try to make contact with alien civilization, he said, according to People. Oh my gosh, did you? Kelly Ripa asked. We didn't, Phillippe admitted, but explained that the plan was to use an app that's supposed to take you through steps that increase your chances of making contact. He continued, the problem is we went too deep into Joshua Tree and lost signal, so we couldn't use the map or the app. The trip was still a success, though, Philippi said. We did lay out in the middle of the night. We laid in the rocks and had a great father and son bonding moment, but sadly, no alien contact. That's a pretty cool dad. Take your 17-year-old son out to try to communicate with aliens.
And then they sat and they shared people jerky together, and it was a nice bonding trip.
Yeah.
Soylent Green is people! It's people!
Said, son, would you like to try some me steak? I have some right here. I grew it for 3 months. It tastes just like me.
Here's a story you'll enjoy, Tim.
Sure.
Erykah Badu is in the news.
Really?
Weeks after Summer Walker shared a selfie with her living music icon, Erykah Badu, the meetup's reasoning has been revealed. The Girls Need Love singer and Badu met in person for the first time for a Rolling Stone photo shoot at Badu's home. The pair, who talk on the phone for hours, interviewed each other for the digital exclusive Rolling Stone issue of Musicians on Musicians. Kennedy Carter photographed the cover, and Badu styled the entire shoot. Badu started the interview off by asking if Walker was super social or a hermit like me. Walker, who had been very open about her social anxiety battle, said that she is a super duper introvert because she doesn't understand human interaction. I don't get it, so I just stay in the house, she added. The Tyrone singer told Walker that she used to think she was the odd man out or the strange person in the group because she couldn't relate to many of the emotions that other people had. She related with Walker because Badu never gets hyper emotional about things, and it made her feel odd because it's such a hyper emotional world. So she created her own space and her own world to deal with it. What does this have to do with the paranormal? Hold on, Tim, I'm getting there.
Okay.
The First Lady of Neo Soul asked Walker if she would ever live off the grid, and the 24-year-old singer replied, yes and no. I'm scared because it gets weird out there. But something like that, yeah, solar power, everything, and my own plants, I want to make all my own soaps and lotions. Oh, still not supernatural enough for you, Tim? How about the next question? The pair bonded over the paranormal, and Badu asked Walker if she could ever ask a super, super personal question about if she'd ever spotted a UFO. No, thank God. Honestly, I would shit myself. I've seen some things that were unidentifiable in the sky, but not going to call it anything, Walker said. Badu said that she is just trying to figure out why she isn't good enough to be abducted or visited by extraterrestrials, and asked, what do I have to do? Well, Erykah, you could always hang out with Tom DeLonge from Blink 182. He tends to attract the extraterrestrials. I'm just throwing that out there. You know? Badu admitted that she was making light of the situation because she knows how traumatic of an experience it can be to many people. I have a few friends that have had those type of abductions, and I've come to the conclusion that perhaps they have a gift. They have the ability to produce more DMT hormone, so they're able to tap into those other realms, Badu said. What were you about to add there, Tim?
I'm just going to make a suggestion to Miss Badu. Stop being so weird. The aliens will come around. They're probably frightened of her.
Embrace your weirdness. Walker declared that aliens are all around us and they're shapeshifters. So anyone could have seen them and had interactions with them, but they wouldn't know it. The On and On singer told Walker that she made her feel better by saying that she was starting to think that aliens were just racist. Discussion on the phone.
What?
Conversation turned to the fact that Badu was in her car, and Walker shared that she actually crashed her car while she was watching a Drake video. And then it just gets even more bizarre after that. But I thought you'd like to know that Erykah Badu is wondering why she's not good enough to be abducted by aliens.
I love Erykah Badu. I have all her albums. I do. That because it sounds weird, but I do. I have all her albums. But I just, she's a very unique individual, put it that way, in that she, I just think if she toned it down a little bit, the aliens would come right to her. I just think they get a little...
weirded out by extraordinary people?
She just sometimes... She turns that freak knob all the way up to 11.
Leave that freak knob on, man. Don't worry about it. The aliens will find you when they want you. Keanu Reeves believes in ghosts because of a strange paranormal encounter he had. Keanu has started talking about this openly. He starred in movies about some strange things. In The Matrix, he acted in a world that was simulated entirely by malevolent robots. In the Bill and Ted movies, his character traveled through time. And in Constantine, he fought with demons. to name only a few of the many fantastical films that Keanu has starred in. And I hear that he's working on a possible sequel to Constantine. These movies have brought Reeves a lot of fame and have fed into his image as an action star. Producers and audiences just seem to like seeing Keanu Reeves interact with these less than realistic plots. And while Reeves probably has never time traveled like Ted Logan or worked as an assassin like John Wick, it's possible that experiences in his life have impacted how he approaches these roles. So what kind of experiences has Keanu Reeves had with the otherworldly and the paranormal? Well, let's take a look. While Reeves was acting pretty consistently from his first minor TV roles in the early 1980s, the earliest role that people associate Reeves with is that of Ted Logan in the 1989 Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. From there, his fame really grew and he expanded into major roles. The many action and thriller roles that Reeves has played over the years have given him a reputation as an action star. Nonetheless, many of his major roles in the 80s and 90s were in dramas and comedies like Parenthood and an adaptation of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. But with lead roles in films like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Johnny Mnemonic, and Speed, people soon saw Reeves as an ideal star for thrillers and action movies. With the kinds of roles that Reeves is known for, it makes sense that many of these roles would involve him dealing with the otherworldly. Bram Stoker's Dracula dealt heavily with traditional folklore, being a vampire story. This film saw Reeves acting as Jonathan Harker and facing off against Count Dracula. In what might be his first famous role, that of Neo in The Matrix, Reeves fights against sentient machines that have been harvesting humans for energy. This is more of a science fiction premise, though. The film draws a lot from religion, philosophy, and mythology. Now, into the 2000s, Reeves starred in more films with paranormal elements. In 2005's Constantine saw him performing exorcisms and dealing with the forces of heaven and hell. 47 Ronin added fantasy elements from Japanese folklore to a historical saga. And in the 2021 year, we'll bring a third sequel to The Matrix. Reeves' acting career clearly involves a lot of strange and fantastical subjects. Well, he has a ghost story. In an episode of Jimmy Kimmel Live, Reeves appeared to answer some questions from the late night comedy host. The questions Jimmy Kimmel asked were pretty random, but nicknames to the movies he's been in. But a question about ghosts prompted an interesting supernatural story from Reeves. According to the Matrix star, when he was young and just had to move to New York, he and his nanny saw a ghost. The two of them were in his bedroom together when Reeves noticed a jacket floating through the air outside the doorway before it disappeared. At his young age, he didn't think much of it, but his nanny apparently was terrified, and Reeves found himself left with the question, is that a ghost or just some kind of weird floating jacket? Perhaps it was that early paranormal experience that led Keanu to his interest in fantasy and science fiction films. And perhaps his early calm at such a strange experience is something we can still see today in roles like Neo, where in the face of incredibly strange, he stays cool and collected. Or that's just the role he's supposed to play and has nothing to do with his ghost jacket vision. I don't know, Tim. Maybe sometimes you're taking things a little too far.
I'm ready for a controversial slant. Are you ready?
Oh, my God. All right, go ahead.
I always thought Matt Ryan was a better Constantine than Keanu Reeves.
I agree. All right, controversy over. Maybe it's because I've worked with Matt Ryan a few times and I like him and he's a good guy. And he recognizes me when we're in public and hugs me in front of people, Tim.
Wow. Well, okay, yeah. Then Keanu Reeves was a better... No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm kidding. No, right. I really do think Matt Ryan was a better Constantine than Keanu Reeves.
He is. Yeah. He is. And I hope he gets to see more action as Constantine. Our final story, another celebrity story. I'm a celeb. Is a TV show. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is a show out in the UK. And I'm a Celeb Castle's Scariest Ghost Stories, Spooks Throwing Stones to Phantoms in Photos. That's right. I'm a Celebrity is taking place in a castle in Wales that's rumored to be haunted, and visitors have been sharing their own experiences of the ghostly goings-on. The ITV show has been transplanted from Australia to Grinch Castle for this year's series, and filming has been plagued by reports of spooky sightings. Members of the crew have reportedly been refusing to work in the 200-year-old ruins at night after seeing ghostly faces in windows and hearing horrifying noises. When it's not being used for I'm a Celebrity, Grinch Castle is open to the public and has become so well known for spooky sightings, they even run ghost tours there. Now, members of the public have been sharing their own experiences about the paranormal at the castle. One named Sonia claimed to have been standing at the bottom of this castle's grand staircase when suddenly the space was filled with the smell of violets and a dark figure emerged in the hallway. So there's a bunch of really cool stories that take place around this. But since they started filming there, some of the stars have had rocks thrown at them. They have captured what they believe to be a spirit on film during the filming of this TV show. So the paranormal is becoming more normal, Tim.
Yeah.
And there's haunted woods around it. It's just it's a crazy place. Cool little story. Celebrities big in today's news element. Thank you so much, celebrities, for being so weird and coming out and talking to us about it on the show. One final email, Tim, mm-hmm. and then we have to say goodbye.
Okay.
Hi, Dave and Tim. Fan of your show from Central New York. I've been an ITC researcher for about a decade, and the paranormal events that took place throughout my life has shaped who I've become in many ways. I thought I would share one of my stories from my recently published book, Look Up, The Journey of a Soul Satellite. Okay, Rebecca, you better write to me with your contact information, because if I'm going to share this story, we're going to want to have you on the show. Late one night, my friend Maggie and I decided to visit our friend Scott. Scott lived about 25 minutes from the small city Maggie and I resided in. To get to Scott's house, you had to drive through a large swamp area appropriately called Rattlesnake Gulch. Nope, nope, and nope, Tim. The swamp surrounded the lonely one-lane road on each side, and yes, some rattlesnakes reside in that swamp. It had to be close to midnight as we zoomed down the roadway, going 55 miles per hour with our high beams on. It was a summer night, but not warm enough to have the windows down on the small compact Maggie was driving, which proved to be a good thing. We encountered no other cars on that long stretch of road, and it was dimly lit. It was about halfway through the swamp area when we came upon something out of a horror movie. A figure dressed in all black emerged from the swamp and was rushing quickly at the car, which was still going 55 miles per hour. It was fast, and the figure was swinging something like a scythe or a long stick as it quickly approached the car. It seemed like everything went into slow motion at that moment. I remember the look of terror on Maggie's face and my heart beating out of my chest. Maggie cried out, "What do I do?" And I shouted, "Speed up! Put the pedal to the metal!" We whizzed by the figure and just barely missed being struck. It was horrifying. We couldn't wrap our minds around what we had just seen. Was it a man dressed as the Grim Reaper? Was it something supernatural? What man would stand in a rattlesnake, mosquito-infested swamp in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night? Why was it rushing the car? Wouldn't it know that it could be hurt as we were driving at highway speeds? What were the intentions of this figure clad in black? Did it intend to kill us? These were the questions Maggie and I shot back and forth at each other as we continued our drive. Once we felt like we were in the car or in the clear, we found a closed gas station and searched for a payphone. We called Scott to let him know what we had just encountered, and we weren't going to make it. We debated calling the police. I don't remember why we didn't. Maybe because we thought they would ask and think it was just a prank call or that we were crazy. I looked at Maggie and said, "We have to go back." Mags looked at me like I had two heads and said, "No way. Maggie, we have to see if that was real. We will go past that area, but we need to know. Becca, what if that creature tries to kill us? It can't kill us if we're going fast." Maggie was understandably hesitant, but I needed to know what the hell that was. As we made our way back down that same stretch of road, we saw flashing lights up in the distance. We couldn't make out if they were police lights. As we got closer, it became apparent that it was a minivan with its flashers on in the same area where the figure came at us. I said to Maggie, "Do you think that thing attacked the van?" She stayed silent as we slowed the car down to 40 miles per hour. "What do we do?" I said. "I'm not stopping, Becca. That thing might still be around. What if it attacked the van? What if there's a family in there that needs our help?" I think we both knew there was nothing we could do for them except call the police when we got to civilization. As we passed the van, I turned to look and saw that the figure in black was still holding something long, dashing toward the vehicle. We never found out who or what it was. It was never on the news, and we never did call the police. Maggie and I still recall it to this day and speak of our mystery, hoping someone has encountered this before. Waiting for an answer we will never get. As Maggie always says, only with you, Beck, only with you. Keep up the great work, guys. And that comes from Rebecca O'Donnell. Rebecca, I'm going to say what thousands of listeners are going to say if I don't mention this now. why the hell didn't you call the police?
Yeah.
If you saw some creepy ass figure with a scythe running around and you saw a minivan with blinkers on and this thing was approaching, why wouldn't you go back and call the cops? Who cares if you sound crazy? What if the people there were in need? Oh, Rebecca, Rebecca, or Bex, or Becca, whatever you go by. I'm a little disappointed in the ending of your story that you didn't call the police, but I'll forgive you because apparently it was in a day and age without cell phones, Tim.
Well, yeah, most definitely.
Took place. Well, that's it for this week.
Oh, Dave, real quick before you wrap it up.
Yeah.
I do have one prayer request, if I could.
Please.
There's a special lady out there who is very ill right now. And this lady at one time has performed with Prince. She's a world-renowned jazz singer from the Twin Cities here. Her name is Debbie Duncan. And she's done more for charity worldwide, nationwide, than we could ever ask. And she's gravely ill right now. She's had some immense challenges to her health, which she's facing some long-term care right now. So we just ask everyone to lift her up, send some energy her way, some prayers. Even if you're an atheist, just thoughts, some nice thoughts for us as she needs some continuing prayers for her health to get her better. If you're interested in supporting Debbie, just check her out at debbieduncan.net. And she's got this angelic voice that, believe it or not, Prince was a huge fan of her music. She's a great jazz singer. And if you want to support Debbie in any way, you can go to debbieduncan.net. But she's been a personal friend of mine and our family for decades. So I just want, if you can, just pray for Debbie to get better. I just appreciate if you do that.
Thank you. And please put out those prayers, power, intention, healing, whatever you can do, witchcraft, spells, magic, send some healing and healthy energy to her and her family. That wraps it up for this week's Supernatural News and Parish Share. But fear not, faithful listeners, because we're never that far away from another amazing episode of Darkness Radio. As a matter of fact, you get two more this week. Why? Because we love you. That's right. Homecoming Alien Abduction is our Thanksgiving Day show. Tim, I thought Thanksgiving, homecoming, it's a great time to talk about that, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And then on Friday, we'll have a new episode of Holzer's Ghosts, because Thursday night, there's a brand new episode of Holzer Files on your Thanksgiving night after you eat your cake and pie and turkey and mashed taters. Go sit down, watch with the family, enjoy a new episode as we investigate Hans Holzer's first case. That's right. We get to go back to Rockland County, New York, to investigate his first case. And as soon as the show is over on the Travel Channel at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, head on over to my Facebook page or our YouTube page and watch the live after show, Holzer's Ghosts. My special guests, Alexandra Holzer, who plays an important part in this week's episode, and Shane Pittman will join me. Plus, we'll take your questions. And then that episode appears as a podcast episode Friday this week. So, because we love you, more of the best in paranormal talk radio coming your way. Thank you for tuning in today to Darkness Radio.